This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod.
And you are here with Blackness's biggest fans. I am Brittany Luce.
And I'm Eric Eddings. And today,
we're gonna talk about do-rags. I realize that some of you people listening, some of you poor, poor people, some of you may have absolutely no idea what a do-rag is. And if you know what it is, you may not actually really know, like, all that it really can do and all that it's really about. Eric, will you please tell some of these sad, sorry people what a do-rag is?
A do-rag is a hallowed garment for I would say Black men and Black women.
Black people.
Black people, yeah, primarily. But it's most known for its association with Black men. But it is used to hold down the hair. Usually so that waves would form, but it also protects the hair from, like, if you go to sleep so your hair doesn't get all messed up.
Right. Like, the do-rag is all about keeping your hair fresh. But there was a period of time where the do-rag was so much more than that, when it had this, like, huge moment. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I am going to walk you through the story of the do-rag's meteoric rise and devastating fall in pop culture, and its eventual redemption. And I found someone to help me tell that story.
Approaching destination on the left.
Oh, this is so pretty.
You have arrived.
It's like a yard. It's like a house. You have a lot of space. This is like...
That's the benefit of not living in the city, I guess.
This is Van Newkirk II. Eric, you know him already.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went down and talked to Van at his beautiful house in suburban Maryland. And as you know, Van is a writer for The Atlantic. But back before he was like this super accomplished journalist, Van was just a kid out there trying to be cool and style his hair. And he remembers the day that he got his first do-rag very well.
I went to the beauty supply store down the street, and this is in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. So we're in the country, right? So this is the beauty supply store in the country. You know, it is one of the five blackest places on earth. You walk in there, and, you know, there's not a whole lot of men's products in the beauty supply store. There's one little rack of men's products. You got your standard, your brushes, the little wooden brushes. Mm-hmm. You got some other Afro products, Afro Sheen, you know, your Stay Soft Fro.
Yes.
And then beside all that, your Afro picks and all that stuff, they have the do-rags. And back then it was like two options. You got the black do-rag with the long cape, or you got the gray one. I'd known the one I wanted forever. It was that black one, the black do-rag with the long cape.
The classic. I mean, you know. It's like the Jordan 1 of do-rags.
So Van took his Jordan 1 of do-rags home, and he was a happy, happy teenage boy, and he could not wait to put this thing to work.
I was beaming. I was hype. I went upstairs to the bathroom, and, I mean, I wanted to put it on right away, right? But I had to get my waves right. So I spent the day up until bedtime. I brushed maybe 500 times. I had like 500 strokes. Like I just knew when I woke up the next morning, I was going to have the 360-est of waves, right?
Mm-hmm. What happened the next morning?
My waves were not 360. they were actually worse than they were before.
Tell the people what 360s are.
360 waves. One, just for the record, this peak moment in my life to be defining peak 360 waves as a part of my job. But 360 waves, basically when your waves are so defined, mm-hmm, that like you have little concentric circles starting from the crown of your head going all the way out to the edge of your hair. And they're like shiny and, you know, not greasy if you're doing it right.
Well, I mean, so Van had not mastered the art of the 360 wave, but, you know, getting the do-rag was still kind of a win because it served another purpose for Van.
I have had a group of kids, I guess teenagers, that I played Yu-Gi-Oh cards with and stuff. Like, I mean, real black nerd culture. They all wore do-rags, jerseys, and we just played like trading card games with each other. And I had my freshest tall throwback jersey on. Mm. And, you know, you got to take the do-rag off right at the last moment so people can see the lines. Mm. And I had a still red line right in the middle of my head. And I went to school. And I remember one of the guys that I played with all the time, he was like, Newkirk, you got a do-rag. And I'm like, yes. Yes, sir.
So Van, he gets this do-rag. He's got this line on his forehead. And all of a sudden, his friends are looking at him kind of different, right? I mean, getting waves wasn't even the most important thing to Van. It was the do-rag. That was the thing that made him cool to his friends. Because, like, during this time, do-rags were cool. Like, I have so many good memories of seeing, like, very cool men. And, you know, I mean, it was men. Women, we've always worn do-rags, but they're more of, like, a private thing. Like, you kind of wear them around the house, maybe in the car if you have somewhere to go. But we're talking about a specific moment when black men were wearing do-rags all over the place, publicly. Like Ja Rule, obviously, you know, like LL Cool J, kind of switched from the Kangol to the do-rag. Oh my God, Nelly.
Yes.
Nelly.
Mr.
Sweatsuit himself. Nelly, hot in here. He always had on a do-rag. I know you have a favorite do-rag memory.
Oh yeah. It's Cameron on Rap City, The Basement, the moment when he freestyles. Mm. This was a very significant moment in my life, if I'm being honest.
Please share with the class. Share with the class.
So I used to come home. I used to come home every day. I would be the first to get home. Mm-hmm. And I would come home, I'd watch Rap City, The Basement, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget the moment where I come home, I cut on Rap City, The Basement, and Cameron was there. Dipset was there, actually. And, you know, Cameron was leader, one of the leaders of Dipset at that time.
Yes.
And I'm just going to pull it up real quick. Dipset, Rap City, The Basement.
We'll break it down real quick, yo. Hey, yo, look, dog, I bought Villa.
So he had on this beautiful, luscious, like, short sleeve Coogi shirt.
I see this.
Very pink. And he's got a white do-rag with a pink bucket hat over it. And he's got the beautiful, like, big eagle Dipset chain.
Oh, my gosh.
Crazy earrings and a big stack of money in his hand. Like, this man is money in this moment. He is success, you know? And, like, it was all, like, accentuated by, like, by his do-rag. It was a beautiful moment.
But see, here's the thing, and I'm going back to our hero, Van, here. Wearing a do-rag may have made Van feel like, you know, he was, like, ready to count bills on Rap City. But not everyone in Van's life thought that a do-rag was so cool.
It was the first time in my life I was wearing my hair differently than other men in my family. It was such an expression of individualism. You know, it really was the first time I stepped outside my parents' worldview, and that led to some things.
One of the things that it led to was a break in a very important tradition.
You go every 2 weeks, you get a haircut. It was clockwork. You go to the barbershop and you talk your trash. The barbers were my dad's frat brothers. You know, my little brother was a little boy then, and we got cut 1, 2, 3. And when I started not getting cut 1, 2, 3, it was like a big break from just a ritual that I had with my dad and my brother. That was bigger than I thought it would be. Then it was actually a legit scandal in the family. You're not going to get your haircut with your dad? What are you doing? My dad, he always took it hard because he thought I was rejecting him. it was, you know, that was one of those rituals you didn't break. And I broke it. And it ruffled some feathers.
So all kids kind of go through something like this in their lives. You know, that moment where you're breaking away from your parents, you know, trying to become your own individual. And even, as Van said, ruffling some feathers. So Van was ready to take that step toward independence. But Van wasn't really ready for what would happen next for him and his trusty do-rag. That is coming up after the break. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
So when we last left Van, he had, you know, ruffled some feathers within his family by kind of breaking their barbershop tradition. Even though he was allowed to wear a do-rag to sort of like achieve his wavy look, he was not allowed to wear one outside of the house as a fashion statement. But all of that was about to change. Because for the last 2 years of high school, right when the do-rag was at its like zenith, Van actually went away to boarding school, where he was finally free to live his best do-rag life.
I was getting a little wild in high school. In boarding school, I had cornrows for a little while, and I wore the do-rag over the cornrows. You know, that was the thing, right? Mm-hmm. You got the spaces greased up, and you wore the do-rag. I was wearing, like, two do-rags. It was just really, like, my parents were there, and we were wilding out. It was me and five other black kids, basically, and everybody tries to out-black each other, right? So everybody's trying to take it to the max, see what you can get away with in this 97% not black school. I had a Platinum FUBU jersey, double XL 05 Platinum FUBU jersey with a tall tee underneath it. I had South Pole baggy jeans, but I wore my shirt long enough to where you couldn't see the tag. And I had a pair of Forces with laces to match whatever other accessories I was wearing. And sometimes I had like the two laces where you could do like the real fat laces with two different colors. And I would just wear the do-rag and like a headband. And I would match the headband with wristbands. And so I would have like a white do-rag, a red headband, red wristbands, and red and white shoelaces. Me and my boys link up and we would go to parties. And the whole squad, everybody have a different do-rag on, different colored do-rag. It's like the Power Rangers, right?
I actually wish that the Power Rangers, instead of wearing helmets, that they did all wear do-rags.
It might be more protective that way.
That's true.
You know, this is like peak do-rag. Like in the early 2000s, you saw do-rags everywhere. I mean, you were seeing people wearing them at school or at church, at the mall. They were kind of inescapable.
It was everywhere.
You know, another place where do-rags were kind of everywhere was like, I mean, NBA, basketball.
Sports, yeah.
But there's one guy.
Yes.
Who was...
I know. I don't... I know who you're talking about. Mr. Allen Iverson.
You would be correct.
Yeah.
He had the do-rag. It was popping. He just like... He just brought a lot of flavor into the mix. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's like the avatar of hip-hop. Basketball, and like everything else that's wonderful and great.
That's exactly why Iverson was the number one do-rag role model for Van.
He gave a press conference while on Team USA in a Team USA red, white, and blue do-rag. And I was, you know, man, that was patriotic, right? Like, it was like Captain America. That was my Captain America on the screen.
So, like, okay, so Allen Iverson, you can bring his name up now and, you know, he'll get lots of love. But also, like, you know, he also wasn't the most chill, you know what I mean? Like, easygoing, no. Like, fun to be around.
No. He was very authentic to himself in every single situation.
That's actually a perfect way to put it. Like, he was always, like, he was always butting heads with his coach. Mm-hmm. He was consistently getting in trouble off the court. But also, like you said, like, he was himself. And like, to be this black man who had millions of eyes on him out in the public eye, you know, not really giving a shit about what white people thought about him, like, that really, like, struck a chord with Van.
His ability and willingness to get out there and speak his mind, to express himself, and to never be afraid. One of the things that I always dealt with as a kid was fear. It was fear of being judged, fear of not fitting in, fear of not making it somewhere because I was too black, or maybe because I was too not black. Allen Iverson was a perfect antidote to that. That's what I looked up to.
He was all of these things that Van wanted to be, but he was also exactly the person that Van's parents did not want him to become.
Oh, boy, my parents hated Allen Iverson. They wouldn't get me Allen Iverson shoes. My dad thought he was just exactly the kind of image he did not want his son to have.
And it wasn't just Van's dad who felt that way about Allen Iverson. You know what I mean? Like even just thinking about the way that he probably seemed to other people, like a black man, black durag, bad attitude. And for the NBA, this image was problematic.
Allen Iverson came in the league and everybody was like, oh, there's question marks around this young man. You know, they're all whole, you know, pearl clutching. And they were really worried that an image issue.
So the NBA kind of seemed like it was looking for a reason to crack down and have more control over the image of its players. And then something happened, something that kind of gave the NBA the excuse that it needed to make some new rules. And that thing was malice at the palace.
And Wallace is fouled, and Wallace did. Oh, Wallace, right at our chest. This has potential to be serious if they don't get between.
So malice at the palace, what was it, 2004, a giant basketball brawl between the Pacers and the Pistons. And Ron Artest was in the stands fighting fans. Some fans got injured. Multiple players were like throwing blows on the court. The whole game just devolved into a giant brawl. And it really, really pushed the NBA to start thinking about its image. And unfortunately, for me, what they came up with was the NBA was too aligned to quote unquote street culture. And they needed to make a change that way.
And it was just a little while after this that the NBA created a dress code for its players.
And the dress code, you know, banned durags. Also, you know, you had to wear a blazer or ridiculous, you know. And I think Allen Iverson, and my favorite player, he saw it as an attack against him personally. And I think it was.
But it didn't even end there. You know how things happen, like major event happens in the news and, you know, it's all in public discourse. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody has an opinion. And eventually, you know, those attitudes, you know, they trickle down. And eventually they trickle down to Van and his classmates.
Because me and my friends, we would, you know, go to lunch, we'd be in class and do rags and, you know, we'd be wilding out, acting out. So that whole uniform, there were some real people getting their, you know, panties up in a bunch about black kids going to class and tall tees and stuff. The rules against that passed while we were there, in the 2 years I was there. It was rough.
I mean, if you think back, do-rag bans in the early 2000s were pretty common. I mean, first there was the NFL, and then high schools, college campuses, nightclubs. I mean, this stuff was happening left and right. Any place where a whole group of young black people could meet, they were going to have a do-rag ban. And after a while, kind of fell out of popular culture. So Van stops wearing do-rags at school because he can't wear them, and durags stop appearing in sports. NBA players can't wear them. NFL players can't wear them. You know, you can't wear them at the hottest nightclubs anymore. And once they lose visibility with, like, you know, the cool people and, you know, the places that you go every day, you know, they kind of start to lose their cultural cachet. And meanwhile, Van kind of grows up. But, like, let's fast forward about 10 years. Okay, Van's an adult now, and he hasn't worn a do-rag as like a part of, like a critical part of one of his outfits in years.
Well, it's not really functional for me now. I still can and do wear them if I like need to dry my hair out or if I'm going someplace and wanted to have a certain shape, but I don't need them.
But one day, something happened that brought do-rags back to the forefront of Van's mind. Van was at work, sitting at his desk, checking the news.
I forget exactly which of the protests we were on at this point. I think everybody was just burnt out completely from seeing Black people get shot and beaten and killed by police.
And Van really wanted an escape, so he went on Twitter.
And I remember people on Twitter saying they were trying to quit Twitter and that they didn't want to keep seeing this, and people were just demoralized. And I was sitting down, like, trying to think of some joke to come up with. And I remember seeing a picture of, like, an Egyptian pharaoh with clearly what's a kufi, right? Or not a durag, but it could look like a durag from the right angle. And I said, the very first durag, and tagged the Durag History Week.
And from there, I mean, you know, the whole thing kind of blew up.
I remember it was going pretty well in the morning, and I had to go to work, and I was not paying attention to it at work. And I came back, and there were, like, thousands and thousands of tweets. Black people are good for this, right? They'll take a joke and take it to the moon and back. And just like that call and response type one-up game, Black folks, you know, they were finding pictures of all these do-rags. I had no intentions of it being viral or celebrated. It was just a joke inspired by being sad on Twitter.
Eric, you remember when that Durag History Week hashtag popped up?
Yes, it was a good time.
Yes, it was a good time. People on Twitter, specifically Black Twitter, were one-upping each other with these amazing photos of people wearing durags or things that kind of approximated durags.
It was a wonderful moment of traveling through the history we create and celebrate. I'm going to pull up some pictures of it right now. This one's really sentimental. It is Sammy Davis Jr. just like in his dressing room counting money.
Wow.
Call back to Cameron.
Exactly.
Cameron was later in this tradition.
Wow. This shit is for us.
It is.
Solange was really right.
I love this one. It's Moses leading his people through the Red Sea.
Yeah, parting the Red Seas.
And this looks to be, it's definitely an improvised durag.
Yeah, I think the cape's on the long side.
Yeah, it's like definitely the durag cape is like down his back.
Yeah.
This is good. It says, rare photos of Moses controlling all types of waves. That, I tell you, there's some good writing on Twitter.
Oh, my God. So that was the first year of Durag History Week, but Dan's kept it going, actually. And even since then, Durag History Week has provided comfort for people looking for a sense of community during, you know, troubling and confusing times.
Actually, Durag History Week was still going on when Donald Trump won the presidency.
How did that feel?
I'm a political journalist, and so my job that night was to follow the news, right? And it was, I didn't sleep. I was on for maybe 48, maybe 72 hours, and just trying to figure out what happened. And then coming back to social media after all this and seeing people still posting Durag History Week posts as another, I guess, coping mechanism, it was just fascinating. And it was, you know, I think really neat to see people leaning on it that way. These little things that build up, that build the culture up, they take on much more significance when they're like a secret language between people who are looking for that type of connection, who may not have it at work, but they find some bit of community and solace. It was the same way as at boarding school with 5 Black people using our own secret language, and I think as a couple thousand people on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, that secret language thing is real. Like, I feel like people are always like, you know, what causes something to really hit on Black Twitter? You know, like, you see those questions.
A million marketers want to know.
They do.
They really do.
And it's like, these things that we talk through and discuss are shorthand for experiences, you know? Like, the do-rag is this hair covering. You know, it's like a $2 hair covering. That hair covering is a shorthand for these experiences that, like, mean so much.
You know, the do-rag to me is, like, it's one of the most perfect objects in that way. It's like everybody knows what it is, and everybody's seen one, but only few really know its true power.
That's very true. That's very true.
There is a long-running debate now over whether President Obama wears do-rags. I think he does. And I think we've caught him with do-rag lines. This was a real forensic investigation over whether Obama wore do-rags. Now, some people say it may have been fur on his brow or something like that, but I am convinced they wear do-rag lines, and I am a do-rag truther.
You're a do-rag truther. The Knot is produced by me, Brittany Luce, with Eric Eddings, Kate Parkinson Morgan, and James T. Green. Our senior producer is Sarah Abdurrahman. We are edited by Annie Rose Strasser, with editing help this week from Jason Parham and PJ Vogt. Engineering from Cedric Wilson. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Other original music in the show by Khalid B., Bobby Lord, Dynamedian, and Nana Quabena. Our fact checker is Nicole Pasulka.
If you want to see some of our favorite images from Durag History Week, including the ones we mentioned on this episode, you should subscribe to our newsletter.
Yes.
Go to gimletmedia.com/newsletter to get the Nod newsletter sent to your inbox every week. You won't regret it. So, Brittany.
Listening.
Today, I'm going to freestyle.
Wait.
Yeah. 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 Talking about sports. And we're going to shine like the brightest we can be. Basketball.
Eric, will you please just...
Yes.
Poor people.